Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Clay Gordon, and you're listening to Straight from the Source, streaming to you on heritageradionetwork.org. In the nearly 20 years that I've been following the chocolate industry, literally from tree to mouth, I visited cacao farms throughout the Americas and spent time with farmers, cacao merchants, and some of the world's best chocolate makers. Growing cocoa, growing cacao is very hard work, and it's hard not to notice that the farmers are often not paid fairly for the work that they do. Straight from the Source is inspired by those experiences with a mission of exploring issues in fair and ethical sourcing in cacao, chocolate, coffee, and other foods with participants involved in every link of the supply chain, from growers to producers to chefs, certification bodies, and organizations interested in promoting the concept of good food. Today, the topic is rating, reviewing, and judging chocolate. The inspiration for this week's episode is that the North American round of the International Chocolate Awards is taking place this week in New York City, and I have the privilege of being one of the judges. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be leaving after the episode and heading up to the judging to, I think today we're working on chocolate bars and bonbons, two of the categories of the awards. So in this first segment today, I'm going to be talking about some of the challenges involved in developing a rating system for chocolate, challenges that I faced over a decade ago as I was starting out in my quest to becoming a chocolate critic. And after the break, I'm going to be coming back and talking about the broader vision of the International Chocolate Awards and the impact it will have on chocolate appreciation. And interestingly, perhaps even eventually on sourcing cocoa. So back in 1999-2000, as I was learning what it was that I needed to know in order to become a chocolate critic, how to taste, what I was looking for, the kinds of parameters, and I was thinking about how I was going to go online and present all this, one of the challenges that I faced was, okay, how am I going to create a rating system so that I could go and present the reviews that I had for the chocolate that I was tasting? Now, I had been influenced, we've all been influenced, and it's a very, very sort of alluring kind of notion about the simplicity of the rating systems we find for wine. So you go to magazine A, and it says this wine gets an 89. And you go to magazine B, and exactly the same wine might get an 87, or it might get a 94. And one of the challenges that I had with a rating system like that is that I really didn't understand how the numbers were arrived at. Normally, the judging process or the evaluation process that the reviewer went through was opaque. It wasn't explained. There was just this number, 93, and you know, what does a 93 mean? And how is a 93 different from a 92 or a 95 or any other number you might get? So in thinking about chocolate, I was wondering, oh man, there's so much to know about chocolate. You have to think about, gosh, when you open up the wrapper, what does the chocolate look like? And then when you put your nose in it, what does it smell like? And then you have to break it and snap it to get an idea of the texture, smell it again, put it in your mouth, chew it. You've got the texture in your mouth as opposed to the texture of the snap. And then you have all these flavors that come out. And how do you go about going, what is this? And, you know, how am I going to go represent this? And a lot of the systems are, you know, based on, you know, a rating 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 or 1 to 100. And they get there by saying, okay, well, aroma is worth 10% of an overall score, and I'm going to give this, say, a 7. So, okay, 7 is now got to be modified because it's only 10% of the score. And then flavor is going to be 50%, and then, you know, all these other issues sort of get put together in a weighted rating system or a weighted evaluation system, and it requires a calculator or a spreadsheet in order to be able to figure out what that number means. And then hopefully the person who's writing the review provides a number of descriptive notes that along with saying it got a 3 out of 10 for texture and a 7 out of 10 for flavor and a 2 out of 10 for aroma and a 5 out of 10 for visual appeal, you know, as long as, you know, we can understand those straightforward characteristics, it's all about, you know, what kind of flavors do I get in chocolate? Do I like the flavors and how do they present themselves? And so in many respects, the number system which gets presented really does need to be complicated by, or complemented, not complicated, although it does complicate it. It needs to be complemented by these descriptors, by this prose that accompanies it. And that's often the case in wine descriptions as well, where there'll be a number and there'll be a paragraph or a couple of sentences that describe what's going on. Chocolate is a very, very complicated product, even when compared with wine. And one of the things that chocolate does not have is it does not have its own vocabulary to describe it. The vocabulary of reviewing chocolate is very much like the vocabulary of wine or beer and lots of other foods. And there are topics which are unique to chocolate, having to do with texture, for example, that you don't find in wine. And by not having a common vocabulary that all of the rating, all the people who are judging the chocolate, rating and reviewing it, have, by not having this common vocabulary, not having this history of years and years and years of criticism and a body of literary work, if you will, it becomes very difficult to be able to go, ooh, you know, here's a chocolate, and you and I can agree on how the chocolate is going to be tasted, how it's going to be reviewed, how it's going to be rated, and what those ratings and reviewings mean for the consumer of chocolate. We go into a store. Oh, man, there are in some cases dozens, if not hundreds of bars of chocolate in front of us. There might be 20 different chocolates from the same area, Madagascar, for example. Some might be made in Italy. Some might be made in the United States. Some might be made in France. And it's like walking into a wine store, you know, where there are hundreds of wines, many of which we haven't tasted. When we go into a wine store, however, often there will be a rating and a review so that we can use to help make the decision. Or what we're going to do is we're going to talk to the person who is manning the store, one of the people who's there, who we can ask questions. And hopefully the person you're asking those questions actually knows what it is that they're talking about, that they've hopefully actually tasted all of the chocolates. Doesn't happen all the time, but they have some understanding of what chocolate is about, and more importantly, how to talk to you as a consumer and get from you what it is you like about the chocolate that you like to eat in order to be able to make a recommendation for you. So as I was thinking about all of these things and all of these things and not wanting to create a system which sort of required a calculator in order to understand how I arrived at my reviews, I started thinking about concepts about personalizing the ratings and personalizing the reviews. And so, for example, my highest rating, a number one, might be this is a chocolate that would be a desert island chocolate. If I have to have one bar of chocolate in the house, this is the bar of chocolate I want to have. I may not share this with anybody else. Keep your hands off my chocolate. Or if I was going to share it, I'm going to share it with somebody because it was my boss and I wanted a promotion or something like that. Just, you know, this is, you know, man, this is a chocolate that I really like and I can't live without. And at the other end of the scale, perhaps 5, might be something that said, you know, this is a chocolate that I dislike so much that if somebody gave it to me, not only wouldn't I not eat it, but I wouldn't re-gift it to anybody because I would be embarrassed to re-gift it, to have somebody think that, you know, I might have purchased this chocolate in order to be able to do it. Unless, of course, I was re-gifting it to somebody I really didn't like. So a not friend and enemy, a mother-in-law that I wasn't very happy with, or something like that. And so using these descriptions, you know, somewhere in between, you know, this is a chocolate that, you know, if somebody gave to me, maybe I'd eat it, but I wouldn't go out and spend money on itself. And it turns out that these kinds of ratings are ones that really resonate with people. That people really, really like, because it gives a sense of personality to the rating, which is hidden by just a stark number. And in the end, what I did is I ended up compromising a little bit about the rating system that I put together, incorporating some aspects of these sort of folksy descriptions along with some aspects of just a numerical rating. So one of the things that I learned during my research is that the chocolate industry divides the market into two parts. So there's a mass market, and then there's a premium market. And the divide is chocolate that costs $15 or less, or $15 or more a pound at retail. Anything under $15 a pound is considered to be mass market. Anything above $15 a pound is considered to be premium. And then the premium market is itself divided into number categories. So there's a mass market premium, roughly $15 to $25 a pound. There's a gourmet chocolate at $25 to $40 a pound. And then there's sort of a prestige chocolate category for things that cost over $40 a pound. And one of the challenges, or one of the things that I was looking for, was how do I go and create a system that would help people understand why it's okay to spend $100 a pound on chocolate. People go, man, $100 a pound on chocolate, man, that sounds like a lot. And that may be true, but there are people who will never spend more than $10 a bottle on wine. And there are people who the thought of spending more than $3 or $4 on a can of beer, it's just unfathomable to them. And then you have people who go, and generally it's people who've spent more time thinking about it and more time looking very closely and developing an educated sense for things, who go, you know, I understand that in order to really appreciate something that I now can understand all of the factors, or many of the factors, that go into why a beer might cost $25 or $35 a bottle or more, or why a bottle of wine might cost $200 or $300. And hopefully I can get to the point where I can appreciate those differences when I drink the beer or when I drink the wine. We want to get to the point where people understand, you know, okay, it's okay to spend $100 for a bar of chocolate, or for a pound of chocolate, not a bar of chocolate, but a pound of chocolate, and understand enough about the factors that go into making a chocolate that costs that much, so that when they do put it in their mouth, they can appreciate all of the nuances and the differences. And so what I ended up is I ended up saying to myself, all right, I've got a chocolate which costs, a gourmet chocolate, it costs between $25 and $40 a pound. And then I said, there are a bunch of different styles of chocolate making. There's a style which is generally Northern European, which tends to be a little bit lighter and sweeter. Switzerland and Belgium come to mind when I think about Northern European countries. There are a Southern European style of chocolate making, which tends to be darker, richer, more intense, more bitter. And France and Italy and Spain tend to fall into those categories. And generally, if you like a cappuccino with sugar in it, you probably fit in the Northern European category. And if you like espresso straight, you probably fit into the Southern European category. Then we have this American flavor palette, which has no sense of subtlety whatsoever. It's just the flavors are out there, bang, 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 bang. You know, we're going to hit you over your head. I'm raspberry, I'm orange, I'm mint, right? And then one of the things that I noticed over time is that there's this hybrid sensibility that's come about, which combines some of the best of the Northern European with some of the best of the Southern European, with some of the best of the American. And so there's a sort of Nouvelle American or Nouvelle French style of chocolate making, which says, okay, the flavors, if there are flavors added to the bar, they're going to be clear and identifiable. But it's really important that the chocolate is what predominates. And we're going to focus on just really, really impeccable technique in delivering a sensual experience to the person who's eating the chocolate. So now we have a sort of price range. We have a style of chocolate making. And now we have a rating scale And this point was a 7-point rating scale, which started from 7, number 1, the top end of the scale was, this is a superior chocolate, which means that this is an exemplar of what it is that you're doing. If you're talking about getting a Gianduja, for example, this is, you know, this is one of the Gianduja's that you want to try because it's one of the best you'll ever have. Going down all the way to the bottom scale, number 1, which says is, you know, this is not worth putting in your mouth. And so what you could do is you could now say, for a chocolate which is costing $50 a pound, right, this chocolate is a great chocolate, right? Or for a chocolate costing $20 a pound, this chocolate is a great chocolate. So now what we could do, and now what I did as a part of my rating system, was introduce something that hadn't been thought of in rating and reviewing chocolate. And I actually don't know if any other food in a rating review incorporates this concept, which talks about value, which says I can look at what it is that I'm willing to spend for chocolate, and within that price range, I can look for good value chocolates, chocolates that deliver excellent quality for the money that I have to spend. And now I can look at a style. If I like things that are lighter and sweeter, I can look for chocolates that are lighter and sweeter. If I like things that are more intense, I can look for things that are more intense. If I like things that have more complex and more delicate and newer nuanced flavor profiles, I might look for a Nouvelle American or a Nouvelle French style as opposed to a traditional Belgian or a traditional French style chocolate. And that's the way I looked at it, right? But one of the things that is apparent, became apparent to me, is that that works in isolation. That's based on my taste and my experience, which is when you buy into a reviewer, that's what you're buying. You're buying into their taste and their experience. And you found that, okay, if I read his stuff or her stuff and I buy what is recommended then and I like it, eventually you'll say, yeah, this person knows what they're talking about because they're talking to me. They understand how to present the chocolate and they understand what it is that I like and I can take their recommendations seriously. Right? But it doesn't work when you're trying to judge chocolate competitively. What happens when you have 7 judges in a room, or last night we had 17 judges in a room, they're all tasting the same chocolates, 15 chocolates is what we did last night, and every single one of the judges tastes chocolate differently. Not only do we have a slightly different method for tasting the chocolate, but each one of us has our own sense of taste. Each one of us has our own sense of smell. Each one of us has our own taste memory. We come from different cultures. There were people from Spain, there were people from Italy, there were people from England, as well as people from the United States, and someone from Venezuela. I mean, it's a really quite a huge number of factors that need to be brought into the whole thing. And that's what we're going to be talking about when we come back from the break. We're going to be talking about the difference between judging chocolate, which is what we're doing at the International Chocolate Awards, as opposed to rating reviewing chocolate, which is what we talked about during the first segment today. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Heritageradionetwork.org.
I let loose a storm and watch it fall down. No matter where it lies, but only where I am.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, 5 generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Clay Gordon, creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com, and author of the IACP finalist book, Discover Chocolate. Before the break, I was talking about rating and reviewing chocolate, and during the segment, I'm going to be talking about the International Chocolate Awards and judging chocolate and some of the implications that that has, quite interestingly, on the potential for sourcing cocoa for making fine chocolate. So as I left off in the first half, we were talking about the difference between rating and reviewing chocolate as a singular personal activity where readers or people who are interested in chocolate or who are looking for recommendations to buy chocolate become aware of somebody whose ratings and reviews that they like, that there's something about their particular taste and the way they describe products or the way they describe chocolates sort of resonate with them. I mean, for example, I knew a particular movie reviewer who reviewed movies, and I knew that if he liked a movie, I wouldn't like it. And if he didn't like a movie, I would like it. So I was sort of negatively correlated with what goes on. When we look at a rating and reviewing, we look at someone who does this. What we're doing is we're saying, okay, that their sensibilities match my sensibilities, and I can trust them to make recommendations that if I go in and follow them, I'm likely to enjoy or I'm likely to understand where they were coming from as they were making those recommendations. That's fine if I'm sitting alone as a reviewer, if I'm sitting alone in a room and tasting the chocolate and making my pronouncements. And you know, like many things, competition in a free market, there are probably now hundreds of rating sites and review sites around the internet. And unfortunately, when you go to them, you'll see that there's not a whole lot of agreement on what chocolates are good and what chocolates are not so good, what chocolates the reviewers like and what chocolate the reviewers don't like. And that problem becomes a real challenge, or that difference becomes a real challenge when you put together a group of people in one room to judge a lot of chocolate over a very short period of time, as what is happening in the International Chocolate Awards. So the International Chocolate Awards are founded by a small group of people in England, partly in response to a series of chocolate awards put together by another organization, the Academy of Chocolate, and some criticisms about how those the Academy of Chocolate Awards were being judged. There's a lot of politics. Unfortunately, I don't know all of what it is that was going on the inside, but there was some criticism that the process wasn't as transparent as it could be. And so it wasn't clear, why particular chocolates were winning some awards and other chocolates were not. And so two of the people involved in those awards, Martin Christie of the website 70%.com, and Kate Johns, who organized Chocolate Week in the UK, got together with a group of people and said, okay, what can we do to sort of address some of the issues and some of the challenges that people came to us with this other set of awards? And I've done chocolate judgings. I've been the head judge at chocolate judgings before. And I can tell you it's a real challenge to be able to put together a system so that you can get 8 or 9 people at a table to have them taste the chocolate, to be able to come up with any kind of coherent sort of response, and that this is what we like, this is what we don't like, we think this is good, we don't think this is good, how do we go make it happen? And that whole process, right, is called managing subjectivity. If you have a subjective decision that needs to be made, and you have a lot of people making that same subjective decision, how do you go about in managing all of the variables? So one of the things that the people who put together the International Chocolate Awards have done is they've said, okay, before we start tasting the chocolates under consideration, the first thing we are going to do is we're going to calibrate our palates. So every one of the judges sitting down at the table taste the same set of chocolates. And in the case of the awards last night, it was 3 different chocolates. And each of the chocolates, we were asked to identify flavors that we might have identified: chocolate, honey, fruity, floral, citrus fruit, cherries, berries, coffee, wood, leather, tobacco, all sorts of flavors. We were asked to identify, each of us silently and separately, what flavors we found in each one of these chocolates. And then afterwards, we did each one. We discussed them among ourselves as a group. We then went through a flight of chocolates, five in this particular case. We went through a flight of five chocolates. And then before we got to the next flight, we went back and did a palate check on the calibration. So we went and tasted one of the chocolates. And the goal was to say to ourselves, were we tasting the same things in that chocolate that we tasted the first time around? And in speaking with Martin, he was at the table I was sitting at last night judging. They did this process some time ago. And rather than everybody tasting the same chocolate, what they did is they gave chocolates at random after 15 or 20 chocolates, 3 to 5 flights. And it turns out that people could not identify the reference chocolate that they were eating. That even though they'd had this chocolate 2 or 3 times over the course of several hours, that it got to a point where palate fatigue was just so great that people couldn't identify a reference chocolate. It's a huge thing for chocolate competitions, is getting to a point of, okay, if I have 5 people and we need to eat 200 chocolates in the next 2 days, how can I possibly do a good job? And one of the ways they did this at the International Chocolate Awards is before the formal judging happened, they actually had a pre-selection or triage section. And what they did was they just ran through all the chocolates, put it in your mouth, and basically the only judgment that the people were asked to make, the judges were asked to make at that point, was accept or reject. I mean, is this something that is so bad that it shouldn't go to the next round? Or do I think it should go to the next round? And all of those were tallied up so that the people in the subsequent rounds didn't have the entire range of chocolates to be tested. But they had a subset that somebody had gone through and said, you know, let's take out the ones that we really can't afford as a judging team, I suppose is the best way to be able to spend a huge amount of time on. So once we got through this palate calibration and did this palate checking after every flight of 5 chocolates, the chocolates were actually reviewed in a way that didn't have any specific criteria. So when we looked at aroma, the aroma was, it doesn't have an aroma, it's got a slight aroma and it's not unpleasant, it's got a basic aroma and I like it, or it's got a great aroma, or it's just got a fabulous aroma. And so every single one of the major characteristics, which are aroma, texture, and flavor, had a 5-step scale, which went from, you know, this is not very good to this is fabulous. There was another step, which is also very interesting, which is we were asked to rate, does this chocolate deserve to be considered for an award? No, it doesn't deserve to be considered for award. I think this might be a contender, was sort of the mid-range to, you know, definitely give this chocolate an award. And so what we were able to do is relatively quickly be able to make judgments about the chocolates in a subjective way, but without focusing on the individual taste characteristics. So if the chocolate came to us in its cup, we were given small samples in cups, and it said, for example, the origin of Madagascar or Peru or Ecuador or someplace like that, there was a sheet next to us that said, oh, here are some of the flavors that are considered to be typical in chocolates that come from that part of the world, or cocoa beans that come from that part of the world. And so, you know, if a chocolate from one part of the world is known for having a particular set of flavors and it doesn't have it, okay, well, you know, maybe you want to consider that when you go, okay, it's worth an award or not, because the chocolate actually doesn't represent either the genetics of the beans or the terroir that the beans came from. On the other hand, if it's got flavors in it that you normally wouldn't associate it with, that beans of that orange, you go, that origin, you go, what it is that's going on here. And then there was a separate section where we were able to check off from a set of predetermined criteria, this had an off flavor, or I think it had a great long finish, the texture of it was perfect, particle size, there was too much cocoa butter or not enough cocoa butter. We're able to give some, you know, fairly objective in the sense that we weren't writing individual notes, but we were selecting from a set of notes that had been predetermined, where we could give some feedback to the chocolate makers, and that feedback would make sense. And so it turned out to be a very, very interesting process, and one that I found to be more logical, more interesting, more useful and usable than any other kind of judging for chocolate that I'd ever run into. And interestingly, the owners of this process, the people who created it, have decided to open source it in a sense. Anyone can go to the internationalchocolateawards.com website. They can go to the page where they talk about the judging process, and you can download the forms, and you can download the methodology, and you can look at the instructions that are given to us judges, and you can understand exactly how we arrived at the process, at the results that we did. Now, they're not publishing the individual results for every single one of the chocolates, so they're not tallying the ballots and then publishing the results of the ballots, just the anonymized results of adding everything up, which is how they arrived at the particular winners, the chocolates that will be given awards. And so the goal is, I think, ultimately, and certainly this is something that I'm going to propose on the Chocolate Life to my community, and will work with the organizers of the International Chocolate Awards and people here in the United States that do judgings and things like that, is to try to get this methodology accepted as a worldwide standard in an open source kind of way, that it's not fixed in stone now, that there is a community that works to maintain the standard, and that over time the standard evolves, and that every year updates to the standard judging form and judging methodology are updated as we learn more. And one of the things that needs to be done is, which is available in wine right now, for example, is just a really good set of geographical descriptors. So cocoa beans from this part of the region tend to have the following kinds of flavors. So that when I judge a particular chocolate, I can say, ooh, this is the people who did this, knew what flavors the cocoa beans were capable of delivering and did a good job of delivering those flavors in the cocoa beans. And that's where we start talking about the connection to the source. So part of this whole process is also something which is called direct cocoa. And direct cocoa is about how do we develop a standard, or a standard code of practice, if you wish, a sort of an ethical standard, which isn't a certification process, but it's an agreed upon method where people who are interested in making fine chocolate can engage with cocoa growers, and then can engage with their community and grow the appreciation and awareness for the kinds of flavors, the diversity of flavors, the diversity of work, which is represented by cocoa and cacao from around the world, and the chocolate that is made from it. So it's just interesting in the sense that this is, as I say, it's not a certification process they're looking for. This is not something that will require the payment of a fee. The farmers don't have to join cooperatives. The farmers don't have to pay money in order to be a part of it. But by producing higher quality cocoa beans that craft chocolate makers can appreciate and use, and perhaps even create a program like the Cup of Excellence Award for coffee in cocoa beans. I mean, I personally would love to see cocoa beans. Right now, the world market price is $2,600 a ton, so it's about $1.30 a pound. In coffee, the price right now is about $2.10 a pound, I think. But there are coffee beans at the Cup of Excellence Award that routinely command $30 to $40 a pound or more for the green bean. And I would love to see a situation where we look at this awards and judging process, and we look at a direct cocoa and similar kinds of projects to be able to go, and how does a farmer who, you know, focus his efforts on creating a relatively small number of beans, a couple hundred pounds, 1,000 pounds, 2,000 pounds, but be able to get 20 to 30 times the market price? It would be a pretty cool kind of thing to do. And as I say, something I'm looking forward to working on over the next couple of years. And here today on Straight from the Source, I've been talking about rating, reviewing, and judging chocolate, the challenges and rewards of doing so, and what it might mean for chocolate makers, cacao growers, and consumers. I'd like to thank Jack Inslee for producing and engineering today's show, and thanks to Aaron and the rest of the Heritage Radio Network team for their assistance. You can always find archived copies of Straight from the Source on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes as a podcast. If you have any questions you'd like to hear answered on future programs, call 718-497-2128. Email the show at info@heritageradionetwork.org. That's info@heritageradionetwork.org. Or contact me through thechocolatelife.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.